G'day, this is an No Feeds podcast and I'm Wayne Jansen. Today I speak with Kate McBride, the daughter of Rob McBride, owner of Tolano Station at Menindee in Western New South Wales. Together with her father, they brought the ecological disaster that is unfolding on the Darling River to the world's attention with their viral video of the Menindee fish kill. Kate tells us what it's like to watch a river dying and its impact on the people that rely on it. Good afternoon, Kate.
G'day, Wayne. Thanks for having me.
No, it's good to join us. So just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you went, because you grew up between, my understanding is you grew up between New South Wales and South Australia.
And yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you went to school in Adelaide.
Yep, so I'm a fifth-generation farmer. I was born and brought up on Tolano Station, which is in western New South Wales between Mildura and Broken Hill, so around Menindee, as you said. Spent the first sort of 5 or 6 years of my life up there, and then my family moved down to Adelaide for schooling. So completed school down in Adelaide, and I'm currently a uni student, but still go up to Tolano as much as I possibly can. And, it's a pretty incredible part of Australia. So we're located right on the lower Darling River, which is why we're quite involved with water issues.
And you were a model for a while too, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was about, I think 13, I got scouted and did a few years of modelling, which was really good because growing up I was a very shy, introverted kind of kid, had absolutely no confidence at all. And so doing a bit of modelling sort of really helped to shape, that confidence in me. And I made some great friends throughout it. But, yeah, I got the chance to either continue going with that or finish school, and I always thought my education was so critically important, so stepped away from modelling when I was about 16 or 17, but I look back on it with the fondest of memories.
Okay, so what actually got you, I guess you could say, politically motivated, concerned about the environment? Was that before you saw what was happening to the river, or was that something did something else kick that off?
It was definitely something that activated it, and it was actually during 2015-16. So for people to understand, of course, Tolano's on the lower Darling River, so we're between the Menindee Lakes, and we're a regulated system, which means that water's released from the lakes, and effectively our river or our part of the Darling isn't meant to go dry at all, and I'd never seen it dry. And then in 2015, all of a sudden, the lower Darling was completely gone, and it was actually a mate and I, we jumped on some bikes and we started riding down the base of the Darling River, and there was just absolutely no water at all. And I knew right then and there that something was going on and that we needed people in the community to really stand up and get involved. So that's sort of something that switched inside of me. But what the issue was then is I didn't have those skills. I didn't know what to do. I didn't even know where to start. And so I actually got involved with Australian Conservation Foundation and did some training with them. And that brought, it was the River Fellowship, and that brought together people from all over the Murray-Darling Basin. So farmers, irrigators, environmentalists, fishermen, absolutely everything. And they really skilled us up and sort of taught us, about the political side of things, as well as the Murray-Darling Basin plan, and that really gave me the ability to all of a sudden stand up and fight for what I loved.
And they obviously gave you good media skills too, from what I've seen of you on Facebook, and then there's that video that you made with your dad.
Yeah, they definitely changed something in me, that's for sure. Before I completed the training, I could not form a sentence together. You put me on a phone call or in front of a camera or anything talking about the river, and I could not form a sentence. I was just so nervous. I didn't have that confidence inside myself to actually use my voice. And then after, it was about an 8-month training program, I think, and we had a number of retreats, and they just developed my skills in a way that I have no idea how you possibly could, but came out the other end, and my media training really, really helped there.
So tell me, in 2015, what was the immediate impact on the primary producers around Menindee?
Oh, it was devastating. So, of course, first of all, the river's the source of water for our stock, and so when that's completely dry, that's a really big problem. But also the fact that the river country, so we've got about 40 kilometres of river country, and that's some of our best land, and all of a sudden we weren't able to use that. And that's because of biosecurity risks. So our river country, the boundary for that over to the other side of the river is the river itself. And so when that's dry, there's no fences to stop our stock from walking over the other side of the river. Mm-hmm. And that becomes an issue when we run merinos and people across the river run things like dorpers and organic dorpers and things like that. And that's when it does become a biosecurity risk. So all of a sudden we had to destock these paddocks and take all the sheep off that area. And it also a water source. But it affects our day-to-day life just as much as well. So, you know, not just it being our animal water, but it's the water that we use for our showers. And all of a sudden we had blue-green algae risks and, you know, the water just wasn't there and we weren't actually able to use it. And during those summer days when it gets up to 50 degrees by 11 o'clock in the morning, you sort of really want that river there. It's the one thing that keeps you sane. You sort of finish your day early and go for a nice swim in the river with mates, and it really is the only thing that keeps you sane. So it had like a big impact on, you know, us as well as our property. But then you've got irrigators as well. So that's just the graziers. But then you start talking about irrigators. So, of course, further down the Lower Darling, there's irrigators there, and all of a sudden they didn't have any water. But places like Menindee, they had a big irrigation industry before all these water issues started. They used to produce over 1 million boxes of grapes. And all of a sudden that water security is gone. So it has a really big impact on not just grazers but irrigators as well. We saw today irrigators in the south have filed a class action against the Murray-Darling Basin Authority seeking $750 million for damages because of their decisions to drain the Menindee Lakes. So
That's news to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So this morning they came out with it, and, you know, it's fair enough because they've been on 0% allocation, and we're seeing a huge amount of people walk off dairy farms as well as cherry farms and everything else. So it's a big problem, not just people in the Darling.
How's it impacting people's mental health around that area?
Now, that's another big thing, and especially right now, of course, as everyone knows, we are going through a drought, and so that's really devastating for people, and it's a really hard time. But something that they don't need on top of that is the river going dry. It's just that added stress that nobody needs. You know, the river really is sort of a place where people get together as well. So I've got so many memories of meeting up with friends and family and everything over the weekends. You go down to your neighbour's property and, you know, you sit in the river and just have a few drinks together and really enjoy that time together. And this summer we did absolutely none of that because the river just wasn't there. It wasn't that meeting place that it always is. So that's something that really worries me, what impact this is going to have on people's mental health as well.
Yeah, so what you're saying is it doesn't just affect you producing on your properties. It also affects your complete all your social life as well. It sounds like life there revolves around the river is what
absolutely.
You're saying to me.
Absolutely. We call the Darling, you know, the lifeblood of the area, and it can be a really tough, dry, barren area at times, and the river's that sort of life that flows through it, and it really does keep everything going there. You know, as you said, not just the stock or anything like that, but people as well. So when that gets taken away, and I think if the river went dry for natural reasons, if it were just because of drought or something like that, people could deal with it. But when we all know that this is because of mismanagement of the actual water that was meant to be there, that's when it gets really tough because water should be there.
Yeah. So that must be having some sort of impact on the town. So, you know, what's the difference between in the towns around your area from 2015 when the river went dry? What was the immediate impact on the towns that you saw?
So this is, perhaps some of like the worst impact that, the worst impacted area that we've seen. Without a doubt, it's just destroying rural towns. I mean, in my lifetime, Menindee's population has more than halved, and that's purely because of, you know, industry going out of the town because the water security just isn't there. Our towns are just going backwards at an alarming rate. Well, Kenya currently has a life expectancy of 37 for males. And we know that because of the high Aboriginal population there, that when the river's in poor health, the life expectancy goes down and the crime rate goes up. And so they're the Barkindji people. Their name literally means the river people. and they call the Darling the Barker. And these people have looked after the area for 40 to 60,000 years, and their health is so incredibly impacted by the state of the river. So it's devastating seeing our towns die like this. We just don't have that water security. And, you know, people are talking about leaving the town and everything like that, especially through this most recent one, you know, with mass fish kills and the whole town just stinking of dead fish and people not having water to bathe, you know, themselves in. Yeah. It's really having bad impacts on the communities.
Okay, so that also, what sort of impact is it having on the Bakinji's cultural life? It must be having an impact there. I mean, a river people without any river.
It is. It's really upsetting to see because, you know, they're one of the big parts of their culture is being able to take their young people down to the river and show them culture. And I've had incredible opportunities to work with one individual, Badger Bates, who has actually taken me down to Menindee Lakes and shown me some Aboriginal culture, which is just absolutely incredible to get to know. But without the river there, they can't pass that culture on. They can't pass those stories or anything on, and that's why they're some of the people that are worst affected, because, you know, this is their life expectancy going down, and it's really devastating to see. And, you know, young people, they want to learn, but they can't go down there. During summer, we heard stories of, you know, kids wanting to go down the river, but they weren't allowed to because, of course, you know, with blue-green algae in the water, it's not safe for these kids to go and play in it. So it's, you know, that's a further thing. And we have a really high population of Aboriginal people out in Western New South Wales, and we're fighting really well with them, trying to continue, you know, their culture going forward and really fighting for their rights to water just as much as anyone else.
Yeah. It sounds like it's a pretty terrible situation. So going forwards, what do you hope from this election? I mean, you know, we don't know what's going to happen, obviously, on Saturday, but what would you hope happens after this election with what looks like a change in government?
Yeah, of course. So as you said, we don't know what's going to happen. But of course, no matter who gets in, we really want them to understand that Australians really care about the inland rivers, and we're going to work, you know, really closely, hopefully, with whoever gets in, whether it does stay the same or change. You know, we've been in contact with Labor. We had Tony Burke come out and during the fish kills and talk to locals out there, which was really good. So we want to make sure that these people continue to learn what's going on, you know, recognise how important the Menindee Lakes and Darling River is for the entire Murray-Darling Basin. So, yeah, of course, we'll keep pushing for more.
It's about 40% of the Murray's River, isn't it? I think I read somewhere.
So, yeah, up in traditionally, some of the better years were about 40%. So it's up to 40%. But usually it's slightly lower than that. But, of course, it does have a big impact. But it's not just the amount of water as well. I mean, you look at Menindee Lakes. So that's one of the most important fish breeding areas in the entire Murray-Darling Basin. 80% of golden perch actually come from the Menindee Lakes. So they're so critically important. It's such an interconnected system. And that's the way that I always have looked at it. I look at the Murray and the Darling as sort of a set of lungs. And right now the Darling's lung is completely dead. And so the Murray's just hang on to dear life, but it's not going to hang on for that much longer because they really need each other to make sure the system's working properly. And that's what, you know, we're trying to get across to people is that, you know, we need absolutely everyone on board to fight for their entire basin. This isn't just about people along the Darling. It's about everyone the whole way along and making sure that we have healthy ecosystems for future generations.
Yeah, so you could actually, I mean, we're in it. There's the sixth mass extinction, but a human-induced mass extinction. So you could actually add this to that pile, in a sense.
We have no idea what these latest fish kills have done. I mean, we saw two fish kills that were over a million fish. In total, there were three fish kills. But we saw two that were over a million fish dying in each one. And we don't know what impacts this is going to have on the rest of the system for a very long time. I think scientists are currently working on trying to work out just how bad this is. But, you know, there's currently plans in place to actually decommission the Menindee Lakes. There's projects on the table right now that will effectively decommission these natural lakes. And so we're fighting really hard to make sure these projects don't go ahead because, you know, not just the fact that we need this system working properly, but with the fish kills that we've had, we really need this natural fish nursery to be at
to restock
working
the
at
rivers.
Its ultimate. Yeah, absolutely.
So What's your next step beyond the election? Say nothing much changes, which is quite often the way it goes. What's your next step? Where will you go next with your fight?
So, of course, we're going to keep fighting no matter what happens. You know, this isn't the end of us. We'll keep working with whoever's willing to work with us, you know, whoever's in power and everything. We're going to have to. In the future, I said on my Australian story the other day that I am definitely looking into going to politics in the future. So, you know, if things don't change this time round, then maybe next time round or the time after, I can get involved and really try that different way of maybe making change happen. But, yeah, we'll keep working with absolutely everyone we can. You know, the Western New South Wales community isn't going to give up anytime soon. We know how important this river is to us, and we've got so many incredible allies working with us that this isn't the end of us at all.
Okay. Thank you, Kate McBride.
Thank you for having me.